session number 13280, reel 4.
Doug Evans, reel 4. Did Harris or any other VIPs come round to the squadron to give pep talks?
No, I don't recall seeing Butch Harris at our airfield during that time. We had a great commander in Gus Walker. You may well know of Gus Walker. He was the clutch commander based at Pocklington in our time. A wonderful man. He'd, by now, one arm. He'd lost an arm in an explosion when he was saving somebody from a crashed Lancaster, I think, earlier on. A great rugby player, RAF Blue, would have been an England rugby player, I believe. But anyway, he was our commander, and he was a tremendous man, and he moved through Pocklington, Melbourne and Elvington a lot. We saw a lot of Gus. He was a good leader, good commander, and happily we met him later on, many years later on. He came to the dedication of our memorial at Melbourne about 7 or 8 years ago, but less happily, Gus is no longer with us. So we did have our very senior officer in Gus, who took a great interest in us, and one felt very proud to be serving under him.
Now, can we jump ahead to the Berlin airlift, and can you tell me about the work that you were involved in, I think, in 49 there?
Yes. I was, after the war, when I joined a charter company in 1947, the Lancashire Aircraft Corporation. And in November 1948, November the 1st, 1948, I joined British South American Airways. This was the third of the three airways corporations at that time, BOAC, BEA, and British South American Airways, which was commanded by DCT Bennett, of course, great Pathfinder man, as you remember. So it was a well-established company, really, by the time I got there in November 48. I did a certain amount of flying on Yorks and Lancasters and Tudors, Lancastrians, rather, and Tudors, Azores and north about round to Bermuda, through Keflavik and Gander down to Bermuda, and down to the east side of South America. But the company, of course, had a problem with this Tudor. We lost a Tudor Star Tiger between Azores and Bermuda in mysterious circumstances. We lost Star Ariel in equally mysterious circumstances from Bermuda going to, I think, Kingston, Jamaica. I was up in Gander at the time. We'd slipped there on our way down to Bermuda ourselves. And they'd also suffered a loss in the Andes. So BSAA found that the Tudor had something of a question mark over it. And as we were now in 48, 49, and the airlift was on and underway, the Tudor was allowed to continue flying on the airlift, but we were not allowed to operate the pressurization and the heating systems. I think I remember that. I think I'm correct in remembering that both these systems were considered as possible reasons, only possible reasons, vaguely possible reasons for the loss of one or other of these airplanes. So they were put onto the Berlin airlift, and this was the Tudor 5, I think. And I was put on it myself. Yes, well, I was transferred to the Berlin airlift in April of 49. Now, prior to this, I'd been on line operations, and I was a second officer. There were three ranks of pilot, captain, first officer, second officer. First officer or second officer normally did the navigation on the long flights to Azores or to other places. And the Tudor now, having suffered this problem and transferred to the Berlin Airlift, I was put on to the Berlin Airlift as a captain. Though I was a second officer, I acquired quite a lot of operational time and transport operational time in the RAF and since in my previous charter company, so I was lucky enough to be given a command. The rate for the job at that time was £1,000 a year, so I went from 600 as a second officer to £1,000 a year to fly as captain on the Berlin Airlift on Tudor 5s. And this started in the 5th of April. We were based at Wunstorf. Our usual routine would be to go to London to Wunstorf, which is near Hanover, and we would stay there for about a week. And the accommodation we had was in a watering place not too far from Wunstorf, named Bad Nendorf. So I was on that operation from the 5th of April of 1949 until the operation ended, and that was around about August of 49. It was an interesting operation because when you consider the number of airplanes involved and you consider the departure stations involved, as far as possible, I'm sure they endeavour to get airplanes flying the same speed down the corridors. It still must have been difficult coordinating the entry point to the corridor. And in our case, we were centrally disposed, if you see what I mean, at Hanover. There was a central corridor that came out from Berlin to Brunswick, and that was just a stone's throw from Hanover itself. To enter, we used the north corridor. So we did a clockwise operation ourselves at 3-minute intervals on takeoff. If you missed your time, you didn't go. Simple as that. You had a little piece of paper. The time of your takeoff was on it. If you, for any reason, missed that, could be for technical or whatever, you simply didn't go. And that seemed to be a very correct way of operating it. But you'd be at 3-minute intervals, as I remember, going down the north corridor. Once over the Berlin area, you turn south and then east, and then turn right again to the west, landing to the west at Gatow. And generally speaking, we completed that pattern in that way, a sort of clockwise pattern, landing to the west. We carried, in BSAA, we carried DERV, that's diesel oil, and we carried oil of various kinds. We carried petrol in very large tanks disposed down the fuselage of the Tudor. In our case, unloading didn't seem to take too long. They could quite quickly empty these tanks and we would be back along the central corridor. I'm trying to recall how many flights we did in a day. And I have it here that it seemed to be 2 flights in the day, generally speaking. From my logbook, seems to me. Wunstorf to Berlin, back to Wunstorf, and then on a later flight, same routine, back again, finish down to Bad Nendorf to stay the night and so on. The place, the whole atmosphere was charged. It was such an intense operation. The Americans ran the Berlin end of the air traffic control. I think the British were, I think we were there actively involved in that as well. Because the Americans operated, if you remember, from the Frankfurt end up the South Corridor using DC-4s and Dakotas that time. Whilst from our end, of course, they had Dakotas from the RAF, as I remember. They had Barry Aikman, his company. I've just forgotten the name of his company. Flying boats. It landed on the one or other of the lakes near Gatow. You had Halifaxes. There were Tudors. We had Tudors, and so did Donald Bennett in his own private company. Halifaxes were operated by the Lancashire Aircraft Corporation, among others, Bond Air Services. So there's such a mix of aeroplanes going down, and really it was a masterpiece of coordination, it seemed to me. All very slick. The last reporting point was this tower just short of the runway. And it was lit, brightly lit with coloured lights. And it was commonly known as the Christmas tree. And that was the last reporting point on finals. But it really did literally go like clockwork.
Did the Russians attempt to interfere with you?
No, not at all. Mind you, it was important to stay within the corridor. The corridor was 10 statute miles wide. And the height limit on the corridor, 10,000 feet. We lived with this problem in BEA for a further 30 years or more. One became very familiar many years later, remained familiar with it, but the corridors were set, even at that time. I'm sure that had anybody transgressed, had crossed the outer borders of the corridor, say, in those days, well, it would have been a different story. There are stories of fighters coming up to company airplanes which were getting very near the border or had crossed them. I don't know any detail about that sort of thing, but certainly I had no experience of it myself at all. But certainly it was also very important to keep strictly within the boundaries of the corridors, and this we diligently did.
Did you have any personal contact with any of the Berliners?
No, not other than the unloaders. No, it was such a slick operation, really. You'd stay with the aeroplane. I never stayed in Berlin during that time that I was there. The operation was one of in, unload, fly out again. The night stopping was all done in the west.
But would any of the unloaders ask you to bring anything personal back for them?
Not that I recall. Though I do recall that they were very short of, for example, coffee. And I don't recall taking any at that time. At other times, a little later on, perhaps yes. Yes, the people in where we stayed in Bad Nenndorf were always glad of a tin of coffee, and I'd be glad to oblige, as lots of others were too. But I don't recall any direct contact with anybody specifically in Berlin.